Sometimes, a name alone will make me want to try a dish.
With a name like that, it's gotta be good. What are faggots, peas, and gravy?
Faggots are a traditional Welsh dish.
Uh-huh.
And you know what mashy peas are? And gravy.
But what's in a faggot?
Meat, onions, pig's liver, all mashed up with a bit of herb.
Oh, kind of like a meatloaf?
Yeah.
Howdy-do, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of My Life as a Foodie. My name is Phil, and we've got some really cool stuff to share with you today. Sean came in for another session. We recorded that. I'll play it for you shortly. It's going to kind of take up most of the show, but I wanted to get to a few things before we got to that. So I'm doing a little intro. Welcome back. Thanks again for tuning in. I have excellent news for the podcast. From time to time, I run stats on the show just to see how we're doing, how many people are hitting us, from where our hosting service provides all these statistics. As it turns out, we are celebrating our 700th download on the Italian Sausage Party. The Italian Sausage Party show has become our most popular show, 700 downloads. I'm not sure why that one, maybe the name, I'm not sure, but it's cool regardless. 700 total downloads and still counting. The polenta episode with the braised beef is a close second. 650 downloads for that show and counting. So the best news out of all the statistics that I read, which is great, is about consistency. We've got just over 200 consistent listeners on every show. I want to thank everybody who continues to tune us into your browser, iTunes, however you're listening to us. Thank you to everybody who's listening, checking us out once a month, twice a month, however often you're checking in. Seriously, I promise the show's only going to get better from here, hopefully. You know, I'm not one of these guys that I don't follow statistics and embrace them. Like, you know, I don't, the podcast awards and stuff like that. A lot of that stuff's not that important to me. I really enjoy doing the podcast. But knowing that people are tuning in and actually listening, so I'm not just like, you know, this lonely bastard sitting in a room, you know, talking to himself, that's kind of cool. So thanks again for everything. Thanks for at least checking us out. It seems like we're always drinking gift beers on the show because the Beer Safari is all about collaborating and sharing and being a brotherhood of beer podcasters, which is what we are. So I kind of found it cool a couple weeks ago. I received a box from Rick at Big Foamy Head, bigfoamyhead.com, Beer Blues Barbecue. Had a beer in it. Jeez, imagine that. It had a beer in it, and it wasn't just a beer. It was a real motherfucker of a beer. Listen to this. Hold on. Let me get this. This comes as a shock. I saw this last year. This is the second year they've done it. And I didn't get a chance to buy a bottle because it came and went before I got a chance. It's called Collaboration Not Litigation Ale. Now, that sounds weird, right? It's brewed and bottled by Avery Brewing Company in Boulder, Colorado. Coincidence, because Rick is from Colorado. He's living there now. What this is a collaboration between Avery Brewing in Colorado and Russian River Brewing here in Santa Rosa. They've collaborated to produce a one-of-a-kind beer. As it turns out, they both make a beer called Salvation. Instead of suing each other, they blended the beer and made one great beer out of it. So I'm going to crack it open. The funny thing is, let's see what they explain what here. The name of two intricate Belgian-style ales created by Vinnie Curluzzo of Russian River and Adam Avery of Avery Brewing. After becoming friends a few years ago, we realized we both had a salvation in our lineups. Should one of us relinquish the name rights? Hell no, we said. In fact, it was quickly decided that we should blend the brews to catch the best qualities of each and create an even more complex and rich libation. In April 2004, in a top-secret meeting at Russian River Brewing, actually, it was packed in the pub, and many were looking over our shoulders. We came up with the perfect blend of the two salvations. Natalie, Vinny's much more significant other, claimed we should call this collaboration not litigation. So, blah, 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 they blended it. December 11th, 2006, they created the first one, and this is the second one. I'm done talking. I'm going to crack it open. You heard it first, folks. Got a little foil top on it. Oh, man. Smells Belgian. Ah, I love it. Now, people don't call this a beer show. Get the fuck out of here. This is a beer show, man. We talk about beer all the time. Oh, man, it smells great. Oh, it's not that dark. I thought this was a darker beer. It's not. It's kind of like an amber reddish ale. Nice fat head on it, too. Oh, my goodness. All I can say is, that's Belgian. Now, I thought Salvation was a funky beer. I must have been mistaken. It's not. Vinny does a lot of beers, and he does a lot of these Brettanomyces and Lactobacillus beers, and he'll age them in wine barrels. And they get funky. You know, they've got the funky flavor. This doesn't have that. I thought it did. I'm mistaken. Anyway, some other things I wanted to do. I wanted to drink this beer and share a few things before we got to Sean. Okay, so kind of have a little pre-beer, and then we'll get to Sean in a bit. But a couple things I wanted to share with you. I found this through Michael Ruhlman's website. Now, if you know me, I love Michael Ruhlman. He's a great guy, a great writer, and I just get inspired. I get a lot of show material through Michael Ruhlman, because the guy's got his finger on the pulse of cooking and food, and it's really inspiring to me. Anyway, Chris Constantino, if you might remember, he was on that the next Iron Chef America on the Food Network. He was the guy that cooked awful. Not he didn't cook awfully. He cooked awful. The innards, you know, the guts. And I played a piece of audio from a little piece they did on pigs. About, I don't know, 4 or 5 episodes ago, and you might remember he was a guy in the kitchen who he made meals out of a heart or something. And anyway, he's the executive chef at Encanto. He was preparing some courses for a head-to-tail dinner that they were having, and they shot some video of Chris preparing the meal, and I pulled some audio from it. And the reason I'm playing it is because I figured, look, I got 700 people downloaded one of my episodes. If I can get some people to follow Chris Constantino, and if anybody knows a book publisher or a representative, this guy's got a cookbook, and he talks about it, and he's great, and he's funny, and he's intelligent, and I don't know why this guy's not famous, but I'm going to play this piece of audio for you. Listen.
So, head to tail is not your typical thought process on, like, nose to tail eating. Nose to tail means you buy a whole animal and you start at one end and you go to the other and you eat everything in between. Head to tail is a dinner. For me, it means that you're willing to eat every part of every animal. So if you're willing to kill it, you should shut the fuck up and eat it all. So, for instance, we're using pig's feet for one dish, we're using tripe for another, we're doing beef heart tartare, we have candied coxcombs, which is poultry. So it's being able to utilize all these different parts from different animals that most people want to throw in the garbage can. This is historical, traditional, and it's also, it's fucking ethical way of eating. And I think it's a huge part of Latin culture. Unfortunately, we're the only culture around that won't eat it. We feel that it's garbage food and it's trash. 75% of the offal cuts from the United States that are produced are shipped not only to the Latin Americas, but to Asia. For instance, a beef tongue in the United States that costs $4.50 a pound at your local store will cost $18 a pound wholesale being shipped to Asia. So trying to get people on the wagon to understand that these cuts are viable, they're delicious, they're healthy. I mean, I'm not saying sit down and eat a giant fucking pork liver in one sitting because it would kill anybody, but learning to eat them in varied quantities can not only do good for the environment, it does really good for you physically, and also, it's just the right thing. The animal is willing to die for you to eat it, so you should eat all of them.
And is the cookbook you're working on based on that?
I've been working on a cookbook for 5 years, and nobody has the balls to put it out. So all you publishers out there, put on your big boy pants and put the book out, okay? It's called Odd Cuts and Guts, Rediscovering the Rest of the Animal. It will be a how-to guide for everybody. So it'll be beef tendon, cow's udder, brains, testicles, everything with photos of every animal's different organ. For instance, duck testicles, goose testicles, beef, veal. But it'll kind of be laid out like a collage, and then there'll be a whole chapter based just on that one cut. And there's nothing like that. There's no education. Because the less education we have, the less ability we have to get the product because nobody goes to the store and asks for it. So the less it's sold, the easier it is for the USDA to say, fuck you, we're taking it out of the system, and then we're going to sell it on the road. So that this project has been going on for, I don't know, 4 or 5 years, and we still don't have a publisher. I've been refused by 15 houses. They're all scared. They're all looking at the dollar. They're not looking at the big picture.
But the recipes are ready to go. I mean, you've got.
I've been compiling these recipes. I have photos. I already have a photographer, Michael Harlan Turkel, absolutely brilliant photographer. There's just so many things that are out there, and even the time that Johnny was at the restaurant, he saw the change. Now the Bay Area, there's been a massive change. People are really running to the product, and it's just changed so much. And I'm hoping that if we put the book out, not only restaurants will do it, but people at home will do it. And that's the goal.
He's funny, man. He's funny. You know, I love it. He says, you know, the animal was willing to die for you. No, it wasn't. I think you got that part wrong. But it is, you know, he does make a great point. If you're gonna kill the animal, you may as well eat the whole damn thing. No, I'm not saying everyone should go out and, you know, eat pig liver. Some of us are willing to do it, and some of us actually like it. Like, oh man, I had that venison, dude. Oh man, it tasted a lot like liver, and I really like liver. It's like the flavor. But the animal was willing to die for you. I highly doubt that was actually. It's like, oh, you're gonna kill. Oh, you're gonna eat me? Oh, fine, go ahead. I'll die. No, I don't think so. Anyway, this guy needs to be famous. This cookbook needs to be released. He needs to be somewhere, not necessarily on the Food Network, but the guy needs to be a little. He needs more exposure because he's awesome. He's funny. He's talented. And he's very intelligent, has a very intelligent approach to eating nose to tail, or head to tail. And most of all, you know, the guy just tells it like it is. And I like people like that. Don't bullshit me. Tell me how it is, and you know, don't sugarcoat stuff. And if you're going to go through the trouble of killing the animal, shut the fuck up and eat the whole thing. Beautiful. I couldn't have said that better myself. Having this beer, though, man, I'm telling you. Rick, you are the man. BigFoamyHead.com. Beer, Blues, Barbecue. I want to say hey to Rick and Dick and Mike, who listens to the show and comments from time to time. I appreciate that. And Martin as well. All y'all. I love you guys, man. This is a supreme treat. Oh, something else I wanted to share with y'all before we got to Sean. I get email for the show, and I've never really share it. Because it's, you know, I just never find a place for it. But I did select some emails that I got, and I thought I'd go ahead and do that. Seems like the right time now. The show is starting to gain a little bit of momentum, so I'm going to read these. I'm not sure if you call this fan mail. I'm not sure exactly what you'd call this, actually. This one was not signed, just anonymous. Anonymous from Haywood, Montana. Dear Phil, yesterday, my teenage son arrived home from school early and caught me listening to My Life as a Foodie while I was parading in front of our bedroom mirror wearing high heels, ladies' underwear, a dress, and makeup. I almost died of embarrassment until I remembered I'm his mother. What the hell? Okay. This one's Stanley Spencer from Detroit, Michigan. He writes, "Hey, My Life as a Foodie, I know you're really into exercising and staying healthy, so I wanted to share this with you. You know how people always say early to bed, early to rise makes a man healthy, wealthy, and wise? Well, try telling that to my dad. For the last 40 years, he's gone to bed at 8 p.m., wakes up at 5 a.m. Yet he's got issues with his colon. He's flat broke and thick as a brick." Well, that's just weird. This one's from Tim Higgins from Miami. He writes, "If vegetarianism is such a good idea, how come vegetarians all have bad breath and they fart a lot? If God wanted us to eat grass, he'd have made us rabbits." You know, Tom? Good point. Maybe I stop reading that fan mail. I'm going to go ahead and get to Sean now. He recently came back into the studio, recorded part two of our interview with him. I hope you enjoy it. Thanks again to Rick for this wonderful beer, Collaboration, Not Litigation. It's being sold by Avery Brewing. If you can get it in your area, get this stuff. It's incredible. It's a great idea, an even better product. Look for it wherever you are. If you like really good, strong Belgian beers, you're going to love this. Now, on to part two of our interview with Sean. We've got Sean back on the show this week. I asked him if he could come back, and, well, he came back. Unbelievable. I was kind of wondering if he was going to come back, as we partied pretty hard after the last show. So, you're back?
Yeah, yeah. Thanks for having me back, Phil. Yeah,
thanks for coming back.
It's a pleasure.
Yeah?
Absolutely.
All right?
Right on.
You tell us some nasty shit?
Absolutely.
Oh.
I'll tell you about palpation.
You do what?
Palpation.
Don't say the P's too hard, because that fucks the microphone up. Say it through the side over there.
Okay.
No. Come in. You can come in. Just talk this way.
Right on. Palpation.
Palpation?
Palpation.
All right.
Yeah, I'll give a little one-on-one lecture on that.
Okay, cool. All right, prepare for some palpation. I was going to ask you a question. Did you? Because I meant to ask you this last time. We're in the middle of an election year, and the Republicans are heavy on this immigration stuff, about tightening immigration laws. How do you feel these immigration laws, if they tighten these immigration laws, how is that going to affect farming? Because we kind of rely on immigrants to do a lot of this work. Right, a lot of the farm work.
Right.
My grandparents came over from Sicily, and they got the shit jobs. They did those shit jobs. It's not just, you know, we're not just focusing on Mexicans or the Asians coming out and doing cheap labor. It's been like this, the history of the United States.
Right.
You know,
right.
Immigrants end up building the country because they're the ones that do all the work,
right.
All the bad work, the dirty work. So, the food packing plants and all the other crap, I mean, that's what they did back then. So now it's farming. So if they tighten these immigration laws, how is that going to affect the farms?
Oh, it's already affecting the farms. The farm, the agriculture industry is suffering tremendously because there's just not enough labor to pick the crops. There's shortages. I mean, right now, if you look in Ventura County alone, during the prime picking season, they need 40,000 people to pick all the crops, all the strawberries, all the celery, all the broccoli, you know? And there's so much competition because the housing market up until recently was booming. You know, this construction was going on. There's competition. People are not necessarily always wanting to work the fields because they have the jobs. And as a result, the agriculture industry is suffering. And now, I was just up in the San Joaquin Valley a few weeks ago. We came up in white trucks. We rolled them in like white F-150 trucks.
Oh, they thought you were INS?
Yeah, they thought we were inspectors. They thought we were the government, which we weren't. We were just civilians, just observing the trucks.
They bail?
No, they didn't necessarily bail. They just wouldn't talk to us, even though we told them we weren't part of the government.
Right.
You know, we're just locals just observing the fields, and they wouldn't talk to us at all because weeks prior to that, they took 80 people off the farm.
Oh, you're kidding.
Yeah, they came in and raided the farm and checked them out for green cards and citizenship.
You wow.
know, and most of them didn't have it, you know. As a result, they families got broken up, split apart, and they're gone.
Wow,
you know, and they bust them for like forged social security numbers and stuff like that. So they were just deported, basically. You know?
So they are cracking down.
In some areas they are. Yeah, some areas. But there's a lot of like lobbyists on the agriculture side that say, hey, you know, we need to have some type of working permit, you know, where we have people come in and work for a period of time and then they can go home. Well, we need these people during our prime season, you know.
Right.
So...
Oh, that's...
It is definitely an issue. We'll see how it goes.
Yeah. What's your stance on the USDA's stiff regulations regarding organic certification? Because I know that they're tough on farms when they're trying to get certified organic. Do you feel they're being too stiff? And do you think that the benefits, do you think they're being stiff in the regulations that they have in place? Are they just to give farmers a hard time?
Organics to me is a controversial issue. I mean, people think organics is true good quality fruits and vegetables, you know. Well, I think organics is basically shit, in my own opinion,
right.
Because organics now is owned and run by big agribusiness companies, you know, and they're the ones that provide high-paying lobbyists in Washington to get the USDA to pass in these certain chemicals that they want to use on the organic farms. So the whole organic industry is now being run by big corporations, and they have a huge influence on it. I mean, some of these chemicals that are put on organic farms, they're carcinogenics. We know it. We totally know it. The people, the consumers, do not know this. And as long as the consumers don't know it, these corporations are getting away with it. There's some produce that I would not buy just because it's organic.
So they're feeding you cancer.
Absolutely.
Wow.
Yeah, there is some real heavy shit that's going on that they're applying on these fields, you know. Like organics, you know, like, let's see, organic is, what is organic?
You tell me. You're the pro over here. I'm just a podcaster.
Well, definition by organic is that there's no pesticides used. And you got to watch out on the types of fertilizers that are being applied.
Okay.
You know, so that's generally what organic means, you know. Right. But man, I mean, some of these fertilizers they put on, these organic crops, they put them on in such heavy pounds per acre that it's causing disruption. It's causing soil, not so much soil erosion, but it's adding a lot of salts into the soil.
Right.
And when you add salts in the soil, it causes salinity problems in the water, which contaminates the water sources, which causes our water to become a little bit more saltier.
Sure.
Over a period of time, it becomes greater amounts. You
right.
know? And basically, it becomes, in a sense, that you can't use that water because it's too salty. I don't know, man. I'm not a proponent of organic farming. Just, I mean, I'm a proponent of organic farming at the local level, at farmers markets.
Right.
I'm majorly supportive of farmers markets. But big corporations, when Walmart starts having organic produce, no way.
Right, yeah.
No, you know
yeah.
what I'm saying?
There's the red big, flags go up.
Yeah, like when Vons has organic produce, I'm not for that because these are mass produced, you know, but at the local level, I totally support the community of organic farming.
So do you think it's the reason why it is, the big deal is being made of it, is it become like a fashion statement for food, of like a food fashion statement? I eat organic food, you know, and that's why it's gotten to be as popular as it has, and there's a money thing going on?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, it's you have all these niche markets and niche little grocery stores that come up and selling organic foods. You know, people always ask, you know, is it more nutritious, the organic versus conventional produce?
Right.
And typically it's not. A fruit is a fruit. A vegetable is a vegetable. It depends on what you put onto it. Is it more carcinogenic to yourself?
So enough about organic farming. Let's talk about this palpation.
Palpation.
A what?
Palpation.
Palpation?
Palpation, yeah. So I did this on the ranch back in Arkansas. You know, grandpa teaches his grandson a lot about farming, you know.
Right.
And my grandpa, you know, joke around and said, hey, one day, 15 years old, and since then I've done it numerous times, he said, put this plastic glove on your hand, you know. I put it on my hand, it went all the way to my shoulder, and he goes, next, he's like, stick your hand up that cow's ass.
Oh, I'm
like, what?
No.
What do you mean, kick? He's like, yeah, he's like, stick your hand up the cow's ass, you're going to go through the cervix, and then you're going to feel the fetus inside this pregnant cow, you know. And he goes, I want you to find the head. I'm like, what? I'm like, yeah, right. He's like, no, seriously, do it, you know? So I had to stick my hand up this cow's ass. At the meantime, this cow's going, moo, moo, you know? And it's just ripping its insides out of this
honey,
cow, right?
Honey, how was your day?
So I stick my hand through this tight, tight butthole. Basically, it's this long chamber. It's, you know, and I go through it. I go about to an elbow deep, and jeez, all of a sudden I hit the cervix, and I hit other parts of the component of the internal digestive tract of the animal, and I have to like go up and over, and basically I go into this other chamber, right, where this fetus is being held at, right.
Ugh.
And here I am, I can feel like different parts of this fetus, you know.
Ugh.
Like I'm.
I hope no one's having lunch right now. Stop eating.
So my grandpa goes, find the head of this cow, right. My face is like next to this cow's ass, like. My arm is way up this cow, you know? And so I find the head, and he goes, now tap it and see how it responds. So I find, I find this little baby's cow's head, and I tapped it, and the cow responded by hitting my hand, like butting my hand.
Oh.
You know, it was like butting, like boom,
like
boom.
A cat, when you're petting a cat and it does that thing with his head.
Right, yeah. Right. That's what it was doing inside of it, you know.
Ugh.
In the meantime, the mom's going, moo.
Yeah, I'll bet. Yeah. Moo, get your 8-foot arm out of my ass.
Seriously, you know, and eventually I pulled it out and
dude, I am never gonna complain about a sales meeting ever again. You have a bad day at the office?
So
it could be worse.
I'll tell you another story, you know, and this is another true event that happened on the ranch. And my grandpa, you know, there's different ways of extracting semen from bulls. One way is you mount a mound of like a female cow up on, you know, you mount it, right?
Yeah.
And then you put these pheromones on the base of the butt of this cow. And it makes it, it's the same pheromones like estrogen and chemicals that are attracted towards the male bull.
Yeah.
So the male bull will mount onto it and start ejaculating, start rubbing, start fucking this dummy cow. And as a result, you're like...
So it's like, basically having sex with a love doll.
Yeah, right. Absolutely. Absolutely. And so who's ever the person collecting the semen, you're like underneath the cow and that dummy. And that cow is coming in, and you have a baggie, and the cow is just squirting right into its baggie.
Oh,
and there's like little vials, right? And these little vials. And so that's like, So yeah, sometimes it gets shit in your face, you know, it gets a
dude, so, yeah, I gotta tell you, first episode you came on this last time, it was like, oh, nice, how quaint. Sean, he knows a bunch of other. Holy shit, dude, you dropping a bomb on my ass. This is like, now it's all yucks.
So anyways, we get the semen that time, right? Well, that's the dirty way to do it. That's the dirty way to collect semen.
No shit.
That's the dirty way. Now I'm going to show you the clean way to collect semen. You know, my grandpa pulls out this black solid rod that's about, you know, 12 inches in length and maybe a half inch thick, and it's hooked up to a cord, right?
Yeah.
And he plugs it in. Well, this is in the barn, right? So we have electricity in the barn. And he plugs this cord into the socket. Basically, it's got a meter on it. You can have a certain amount of electrical volts being applied.
Uh-huh.
And you got a screen, a monitor screen as well, too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? It's all hooked up to a laptop and everything. And you stick this rod, 12 inches, right, up the bull's ass, right?
There's a computer in the room?
No. Well, there's a computer in the room,
yeah,
with a laptop, but it's separate. It's for the analysis part.
So you keep my laptop away from that cow.
Yeah, right. So you stick this rod up this cow, this bull's ass, right? And then you turn on the electricity, right? And it basically, you know, it's fucking electric in the inside of this bull. But it's not a high voltage. But you understand, it's fucking extremely painful,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
And what it causes this bull to have an erection. And when it has an erection, the more electricity you give it, the more semen drips out. And so,
son of a gun.
Basically, you have a test tube and this vial, and the semen is dripping right into this vial, right? So you want to check out the viability of the sperm, right? So then you switch the tubes and you get the semen, you pour a little bit on the screen, right? And then you can see the monitor and you can see the viability of the sperm.
This sounds like a lot of work. Can't they just put the two cows in a room together and play some soft music or something?
Oh, no, dude. This is
these cows just won't naturally have sex together?
Oh, absolutely. They won't.
Yeah, so what are you going through all this trouble for?
Oh, this is artificial insemination, right? So this is if you want to get your cow, your male sperm. Say you won grand champion, the national grand champion, right?
Right, right.
And you want to sell the sperm across the world.
Right.
You can make millions of dollars. $2 million, right?
On a normal, so this isn't something you would normally do. This is only, you would do it for like, if you wanted a specific cow, or you wanted these specific cows to mate.
Right, these bulls, yeah. You want them for export and artificial insemination.
But you can't just put the two of them together in a room and say, you know, go have fun?
Oh, absolutely you can. But say you're a rancher here, and you have these cows here, and you want this beastmastiff bull over here
from
North Carolina. Well,
right.
You want to buy that semen, you want to get it over here, and you want to transfer that fertilization into this cow.
Gotcha.
Right? So then that's how they do it. That's how they get that bull to ejaculate the sperm.
Right.
By sticking this rod up and turning electricity on it.
Because they don't have bovine porn or anything, right?
So yeah, man, that's another way of collecting sperm. Yeah, I've done both those methods and
horrible
sperm. You know?
Horrible job.
Oh man, it's a learning experience. Let me tell you,
learning
working on a ranch is a lot different from
pulling vegetables out of the ground,
or even just going to school and not being knowing what a cow is. You know,
yeah, that's street knowledge. What you're getting there,
yeah,
right? That's right, right? It's like street knowledge.
Absolutely, man. I mean, you look at all these kids, these inner city kids. I mean, they have no idea. Like I said, they have no idea where the food comes from. You know, and I know firsthand basically where this comes from.
Dude, I was doing so good with my show. Now, there go all my listeners. You will not believe what I heard today. I was on my way to work, and this guy's talking about sticking his arm up a cow's ass and then having sex with a cow love doll. Bessie Does Dallas. Oh.
Putting a rod up a cow's ass and turning electricity on.
Good God. I have one last question for you.
Sure.
Because I meant to ask this one too, and I left it on my list. The profit, because I asked about last time you were here, I asked about the profit margin on a cow.
Uh-huh.
Right? So from the time you raise it, how much, whatever cost you to raise it, and then what you get from the slaughter.
Right.
And, while I'm on the subject, woollypigs.com. Everyone check them out. There's a link on the site. Check them out. Woollypigs.com. Just an awesome idea these guys have. They've been doing it for years. They're up in Washington. They raise a strain of pig from Austria, and they're very careful about the pigs. I mean, these pigs get treated like gold until they kill them, and they're fantastic, and they must taste great, and they sell the meat, and they make sausages and stuff, and they sell them at a farmer's market up there. Anyway, check it out. These guys are fantastic. Of the three, beef, pork, chicken, okay, you raise a pig, a cow, or a chicken. Of the three of those animals, which of those animals has a higher profit margin to the farmer?
The pig does.
The pig?
The pig does, yeah. the pig has the highest profit margin to the farmer.
So it's pig.
Yeah, yeah, because you can utilize so much of the pig.
So you get more out of it. Well, the cow's kind of that way too. I mean, don't they?
When you kill a cow, yeah, it's about 65% of the dressing weight is usable.
Oh, because of the hide.
Because of the hide. Well, you can use the hide. I've used the hide. I've sold all my hides for $20 a piece.
Okay.
To leathering companies or people that want to produce like leather boots or belts out of it.
But you get almost 100% utilization from the pig, though, right?
No, actually, you get less. You get 50%.
50%?
You get 50%, yeah.
Whoa.
But you just... Because
they're eating pig's feet. They're selling pig ears in pet stores. These dogs chew on pig ears.
Yeah, but...
Like, they're selling everything.
Yeah, right.
They sell everything but the oink.
Right. But for like my situation, for myself... Like, I don't use the fat. Like, I didn't convert the fat into lard.
Oh, okay.
Where, like, a mass producer.
But I'm talking overall.
Oh, okay. Overall, yeah. I would definitely, you can use 100% of the pig.
You can.
For sure. Absolutely. Okay. Yeah. For the profit margins, if you have to choose between which three, you'd want to choose pigs.
Right.
You know, for one, they produce so rapidly.
You don't get that much out of a chicken, though, right?
Oh, yeah. You can use a lot of a chicken.
I mean, but the profit margin on a chicken is not...
No, it's very low.
It's low.
It's very low,
Well, they're selling these chickens like Foster Farms. They'll all the time, you'll see these sales go on 69 cents a pound.
Yeah, right.
How the hell are they getting away with that?
Well, they're doing mass production of it. You know, these chickens are all genetically modified. I mean, these chickens are so massively... Such big breasts on them, they can't naturally have sexual reproduction on their own.
Right.
You know, so... They do. I don't know how they breed chickens in that sense. If they do artificial insemination or not, like I don't know about that.
Thank God you don't. I don't want to hear that shit again, ever.
But yeah, I mean, the chickens, man. The way they're raised, you know, most of the time they're several of them, six or seven of them in a pen, in a small cage, and they can't expand their wings.
Really?
You know? Yeah, they're pretty. Held pretty tightly, you know, and they're such in controlled environments. When my family's involved with poultry, dairy, and beef, they raise Black Angus, Jersey cows, and their white Leghorns.
Okay.
And when I was a kid, I used to run around in the chicken coops, and we'd have like anywhere from 5,000 to 10,000 heads of chickens. The small little guys, little hatchlings, they're like, you know, little yellow fur balls, you know, and they open up, they're in big pens, they're allowed to run around and stuff like that, right? Well, as a kid, I remember walking through these chicken coops. And running, seeing thousands of chickens, but alongside, seeing hundreds of rats running across the borders, right? Ugh. Because all the dead chickens, you know, that was a source of food for the rats. And also, they would, because rats are kind of omnivores as well. And they would also
eat. The what?
Omnivores.
Okay.
Yeah, the scavengers and stuff. And so they would also eat, you know, grains as well, too. I'm sure they're probably riff rats. Maybe they might have been Norway rats. I'm not sure.
A rat's a rat. Kill the son of a
there
bitch.
There you go, absolutely. Yeah, they vector diseases like the plague.
Yeah.
Well, the fleas do. They carry on the rats.
Oh, but, yeah.
But yeah, you know, so, but as they get older, they're definitely cooped up in pens, you know, and they're just grain fed continuously, you know. And I have a big problem with that, you know, and for the most part, man, I'm not really too ethical on the treatment of animals. To some degree, I'm like, yeah, let the animals have space, especially the livestock animals. Like, I care a lot more about those. But birds, man, they have such a six week lifespan before they're dead. You know, they get 6 weeks. 4.8 to 5.5 pounds. Once they reach that, they're dead. They're gone. They're in the slaughterhouse.
So yeah. You're not going to treat them ethically? What?
Yeah. So my concern is I don't care if they're raised in small cages. I'm concerned about what you feed them. You know, when you feed an animal, like say a chicken, which is an omnivore, strictly grain, the protein level in the egg is like a third less, right? So if you have free-range chickens and you feed them like crickets and grasshoppers and worms and other stuff like that, the protein level is at the max production. Therefore, when you have like a free-range chicken, or at least has access to insects, it's got a really dark yolk, right?
Mm-hmm.
And whereas a vegetarian-fed chicken, it's got a really light yolk.
Oh.
So it's more nutritious to have a chicken that's fed free-range on the farm, eating like bugs and insects, right. You know? So my concern is not so much about the ethics, whether the animal's free-range or not. It's concerned about what it's eating.
Right.
The food source, nutritional value.
But 6 to 8 weeks, and that thing's on gone. The chopping block.
Yeah. 5 pounds. A little over 5.2 to 5.5 pounds, it's gone.
And yeah. one last thing. What's the oldest, let's say the oldest you'd ever want to keep a cow around before you slaughter it?
Interesting question, man. I mean, if you look at the dairy industry now, 7 or 8 years, that's considered an old cow. on the farm, we've had cows 15 years plus.
And still killed them?
Sorry?
And you still would slaughter them at that age?
Would I eat them?
I mean, that's a long-ass time to be keeping a cow around, right? Yeah, I mean, but what's the meat like after that?
Oh, it's not good quality, man. It's not the best. I typically don't like to eat female cows, female animals, period. I like to eat male animals.
Well, you do, huh?
Yeah, absolutely.
Bow,
yeah.
Cheeky, cheeky, bow. I didn't know that about you. You're going to have to go. Oh, look at the time. I got you.
Yeah, so, the male animals have got, higher, not so much higher protein. They just got more muscle mass.
You and Andrew Zimmern. Always eating the cock and balls in his mouth. Well, on that note, we're going to have to go. Hey, listen, Sean, thanks, man. Thanks a lot. I appreciate you coming down again.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, dude, let's do this again sometime, man.
Sure.
You go back, get some more stories like the thumb up the ass story, right? And come back with more of those, and we'll have you back on. Hey, this has been My Life as a Foodie. Thanks again for tuning in. Sean, thank you, man.
Thank you.
All right, and good luck on everything. When are you graduating? In June?
June, yeah.
And listen, we'll have a graduation party for you right here.
Right on.
All right? Right on the show? All right, cool?
Absolutely.
All right, dude.
Okay.
Hey, thanks again, everybody. We'll talk to you soon. Ciao.